Hello, and welcome to the second installment of the Psychology Podcast, sponsored by the Texas Tech University Psychology Department. Today's topic is on persuasion, and I'm at a local used car lot in Lubbock, Texas, where... Oh, hold on. There's a salesperson approaching me.
Hey, welcome to the lot. I see you've been eyeing this car over here.
Why, yes, I am.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you something. This is our first day on the lot. She's super clean, extra low mileage. How about we go inside, grab a cup of coffee, get out of the cold, you know, talk some numbers, maybe set up a test drive?
Well, it'd be hard for me to turn down a free cup of coffee in this weather.
Who would? Also, just between us, if you're interested in driving this car up the lot today, I bet you I can get my manager to give you a really good deal.
You know what? I'll have to meet you in there. I was just introducing our podcast. Sorry about that, folks. As you know, persuasion is a facet of everyday life. It exists while watching TV, talking to a salesperson, much like what happened a few moments ago, or even with a significant other or roommate wanting you to take out the trash. Right now, I'd like to welcome Dr. Jeff Larson, faculty member at Texas Tech University, to explain to us what really happens when salespeople try to sell us things. Dr. Larson, what are the common tactics that salespeople would use to get you to buy their products?
One way to get you to buy the product is to persuade you that it's a good product, to induce in you a positive attitude toward the product. But they can circumvent persuasion with what are called compliance techniques. So they can get you to do what they want you to do without even changing your attitude toward the product. One class of compliance techniques exploits what's called the norm of reciprocity. The norm of reciprocity is basically the idea that if I do a favor for you, you now feel obligated to do a favor for me. So a very simple and straightforward way of capitalizing or exploiting the norm of reciprocity is what's called the free gift technique. If someone comes up and offers you a free gift of one kind, it might be as simple as a taste tester at the grocery store or coffee and donuts at the car dealership, you now feel obligated to reciprocate. But of course, it isn't an innocent gift. It isn't really a free gift. They set up this situation so that the only way for you to reciprocate this free gift is by buying their product.
Now, when I think of persuasion, I tend to think of car salespeople. What are some of the sneaky tricks that they like to use?
Conventional wisdom holds that you should always maintain high supply to make sure that you'll be able to meet demand. Interestingly, however, sometimes lack of supply can be the best sales technique. So, for instance, very often car dealers, they will advertise these sales, but of course there are only one or two models that fit the criteria, but they're gone. Now you're already there. You've already said, I want to buy a car. And so obviously the car dealer is going to have plenty more models to show you, but of course it's at a premium, it's a higher price. Another tack that compliance artists use by capitalizing or exploiting our need for consistency. When we have behaved in one way or said that we're going to behave in one way, we find it very difficult to then go against that and act in some other way. The way they capitalize on this is with what's called the foot in the door technique, whereby, for instance, you're negotiating for a car and you arrive at a deal, you say, okay, I will buy the car. And then the salesperson says, great, we have a deal, but I need to go clear it with my manager. They go away for a few minutes. The manager says, nope, I'm afraid we can't do it at that price. We need to bump up the price. But since you've already said, I'll buy the car, you feel that it's difficult for you to now go back on that and say, no, I'm not going to buy the car.
Okay, you've mentioned a lot of techniques, and I'm sure there's plenty more. Overall, what do you believe to be the most effective form of persuasion? Would it be something like subliminal messaging?
What people really should be afraid of is the advertising that we see every day. The billboards and the commercials on television. People are much more susceptible to persuasion in those contexts than with subliminal appeals, but people actually perceive themselves as being less persuaded by those appeals. And that is one of the precise things that makes them work. When your guard is down, it's going to be much easier to persuade you.
Dr. Larson, thank you for sharing with us how persuasive tactics are commonly used. The next question I'd like to pose is, how do persuasive techniques work psychologically? For information on that, I'd like to address over the phone lines Dr. Richard Petty, persuasion expert and faculty member at Ohio State University. How exactly does persuasion work?
Well, probably the critical thing to know about persuasion is that it can take place quite thoughtfully, where people really think about all the information they're presented, or it can take place less thoughtfully. So that's the kind of persuasion that takes place when someone just relies on a simple source cue. She's attractive, so therefore I'll go along, or the person seems to be an expert, so I think that makes sense, or it all kind of depends on how much you're thinking about things.
Why does it matter if we're thinking a lot or not about the message?
The main reason it matters, and the reason psychologists want to know if persuasion to an attractive source was because you really thought about the information or because you just used the attractive source to go along, is that thoughtful persuasion lasts longer, it resists change, and it guides our behavior. And typically when you're trying to influence someone, whether it's in an election campaign or in the mass media or in a legal case, you want the attitudes that you induce in people to have consequences. And because people are more certain or confident in their attitudes when they've thought about them a bit, those attitudes under high thought, people will be motivated to defend them if someone tries to attack them. And perhaps most important, they'll use them to guide their behavior. And so you can produce attitude change without thinking or with thinking, but thinking is better because people will go on and vote for the candidate or buy the product and do those behavioral things that you want them to do.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to reveal the inner workings of persuasion. It is my advice to you to stay aware of these tactics and understand that free gifts are not merely free gifts. They're often used as a means to convince you to behave in a specific way. Also, when others do not stand by their word, it doesn't mean that you still have to. If you agree to a lower price and a salesperson went back on his or her word, you have the ability to say, "No, thank you," and walk away. Just think critically about the situation and ask yourself who is really benefiting from the deal. As for now, we're out of time. To learn more about the Texas Tech Psychology Podcast, please visit www.psychology.ttu.edu.
Hey, so how about that coffee?
I would also like to thank Paul Derby for playing the part of the ever-so-convincing car salesman. This podcast was produced by Dr. Frank Durso, edited by Paul Derby, and relayed by myself, R.B. Watts. Stay healthy and active, and have a great day.